In the country with your host, Dave Woods. This is the radio show where country music gets up close and personal. Spend some time in the country and get to know our guests. Spend some time in the country where the music's the best. The latest news and memories, two great stories that get told.
And we have a great show in store for you. My special guest is country legend Bill Anderson, also known as Whisperin' Bill. At just 19 years of age, he wrote the country classic City Lights, which was recorded by Ray Price. The song went to number one. That was in 1958. And later in 1975, Mickey Gilley had a version that went to number one as well. Other hits followed. In fact, the hits have never stopped. You know Bill's classics, Po' Folks, Still, Bright Lights and Country Music. In recent years, he's had a hand in writing hits for Brad Paisley, George Strait, and Kenny Chesney, and all those songs soared to the top of the charts. He also recently released a new album of his own entitled Songwriter, and this past Sunday, Bill was inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame. It's my pleasure to welcome to the show Bill Anderson. Hey, Bill.
Hey, Dave. How you doing?
I'm doing wonderful this evening. How are things in Nashville?
Well, let me correct. They're very hot, but let me correct what you just said. I was inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame in 2001. This past Sunday, they put my star into the Nashville Country Music Walk of Fame, which is a totally different thing.
Okay. Thanks for the correction. You're into the Hall of Fame and now the Walk of Fame.
Yeah, you can go down to the Walk of Fame is in front of the Hall of Fame, so you can go to the Hall of Fame and go out to the walk and stomp on me if you want to.
what a terrific honor.
Yeah, well, it really is. It was a very nice honor, it really was, because, you know, they have the Walk of Fame in Hollywood and places like that, and you're always seeing pictures of the movie stars having their plaques put in the Hollywood Walk of Fame. So they started one here in Nashville about 10 years or so ago, and it's very, very nice, and they had a very nice induction ceremony. They put me and Keith Urban in there at the same time. So we had the Georgia boy and the Australian boy go in at the same time, and it was a very nice ceremony.
Isn't that terrific? Now, have you done any writing with Keith up to this point?
No, I haven't, but I sure would. All he's got to do is call me, and I gave him my number.
That's terrific. And the new album, Songwriter, what a very appropriate title. And one of the songs on there is sort of a tribute to what people do who write songs, the songwriters.
Well, I wrote that kind of tongue-in-cheek, really. I have a lot of fun with that when I go out and do personal appearances at various songwriter functions around Nashville and around the country. It's a little bit like the country DJ song I did many years ago where I talked about being a disc jockey, but I kind of did it tongue-in-cheek and talked about it kind of in a fun way. And that's
right.
What I've kind of done here with the songwriting profession.
Well, it's a great album, and one of the songs off it is Papa's Sunday Shoes, which we're going to be sharing on the show. And I've listened to this song, and it is so touching, and I'm sure the response you've had so far includes a couple of tears at least.
Well, it really has been. I did this on national television here in the States about a month or so ago, and it just was almost like the song came alive. It was almost like, even though it's been out in the album for a while, I think when people saw me do it on TV and they really maybe listened more closely to the words or something, it seemed to take on a whole new life. And I've been doing it at the Grand Ole Opry for the last few weeks and just getting a tremendous reaction to it. And it's Papaw's Sunday Boots instead of shoes, though.
These were
boots. They weren't just old ordinary shoes.
That's right. That's right. It's a great song, and it touches on something so personal, boots, which is, you know, something that was close to, you know, the character in this song and becomes close to his son. And those are tangible things, aren't they? So stuff like clothing and gloves and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, very much so. And, I, you know, when, when Joshua Ragsdale and I were writing this song, we were both very close to our grandfathers. And I'll be honest with you, we didn't get through the writing session without shedding a tear or two, both of us. Because we had the memories of our grandfathers in different times and different generations, different parts of the country and all. But I think anybody that's had a close relationship with a father or a grandfather can understand the sentiment in this song.
Now, the song also includes something that you've made very famous, and you don't always hear, especially these days in country songs, the recitation, the spoken word. How much do you enjoy doing that as part of your songs, Bill?
Well, when we wrote the song, we actually did not write the recitation in it, but when I went to record it, it just sounded like that's the way Bill Anderson ought to do it. I just was not comfortable singing that last verse. It just felt like it makes the song just a little more personal if I can just kind of talk a line or two. And I felt like right there toward the end of the song that was something I wanted to say instead of to try and sing. It's just part of what Bill Anderson does, I guess.
Definitely, yeah. We're going to get to the song. It is very beautiful and very touching. Bill, is there somebody so far out there? I mean, so many artists have recorded your songs. In recent years, George Strait with Give It Away and A Lot of Things Different, recorded by Kenny Chesney. Is there an artist that so far has eluded you, but you're still working on it to get a cut from?
Yeah, I'm working on a bunch of them. Every one of them I can work on. Golly, you know, the other night we were down at the Hall of Fame inducting Gene Shepherd and a songwriter named Bobby Braddock and the newest member, Reba McEntire. And I was up there thinking, you know, Gene Shepherd recorded many of my songs over the years. I've recorded Bobby Braddock's songs. And Reba McEntire has never recorded a song of mine. And I'm a big fan of hers as a person and as an artist. I would really like someday to write something that Reba would like enough to record it. Reba has a reputation in our business as being pretty astute at choosing songs, and when she chooses one, as is the case with George Strait, it's really kind of a compliment because they get pitched the best songs in town, you know, and for them to choose one of yours to record is pretty special. So maybe someday Reba will do one. I hope so.
That sounds great. And can you refresh our memories? I remember reading in Country Weekly where you talked about your songwriting process and how nowadays so many of the writers come in with a laptop computer or some kind of electronic device, but you still rely on the good old pen and pad of paper, is it?
Brad Paisley and I were writing not too long ago, and he's sitting over there across the room with his laptop in his lap, and he's doing all these, you know, computerized things, and I'm over there with my pencil and my paper, and Brad looks across the room and he yells to me. He says, "Hey, Moses, when did you stop writing with a hammer and chisel?"
they
tease me about it a lot, but they know that I come home after the writing session, and I'm not completely computer illiterate, as you know, because we've shared emails. So when I come home, I take it off of that piece of paper and put it into the computer. But I don't know, there's just something to me, it just doesn't seem like you're writing a song if you're typing it onto a computer screen. You'd ought to be sitting there with a pencil with a big eraser on it and your paper, and you can erase all the bad lines and hopefully write in the good ones.
Now, on the subject of erasers with songwriting, and I was just recently at actually a songwriting conference put on by the NSAI, and a lot of them were talking about songs aren't written, they're rewritten. How often, Bill, do you rewrite your songs when necessary?
Well, it's always necessary. If you don't rewrite it, you certainly tweak it. You don't ever get through with just the first draft, because you'll find maybe a word or a phrase that you can make a little better. Maybe you can change the melody slightly to maybe put more emphasis where you want the emphasis to be put. So the minute a song is completed, or the minute you think it's completed, that's when the rewrite process begins. And if you're lucky, it'll end fairly soon. If not, it may go on 2 or 3 years before you get it exactly the way you want it.
Have you had a song? I know many of them come pretty quickly, but have you had one that a couple of years down the road, you finally finished it and said, at last it's done, and you were happy with it?
Yes, and it's one of the silliest, stupidest, craziest songs I ever wrote, but it took me 3 years to write it. And the reason it took me so long was I had such a hard time coming up with the verses to match the chorus. The song is that silly little song that Roy Drusky had a number one hit on years ago called Peel Me a Nanner, Toss Me a Peanut, and I'll Come Swinging from a Coconut Tree. I mean, how in the world do you find verses that go with a chorus like that? And it took me a long time, but after 3 years, one day it just hit me out of the blue, and I wrote the verses just bang, bang, bang. It just took a while for the bang to get there.
Yeah, exactly. It was a slow burn.
Yeah, very slow.
Now, you talked about Brad Paisley a moment ago. Of course, a big song for him and a big song in country music a few years back, his duet with Alison Krauss, Whiskey Lullaby, that you wrote with John Randall. Can you give us a little story behind the song on that, Bill, how that song came about? And I understand that it wasn't sort of, I guess, listening to it, it's not necessarily a commercial song you would think would climb the charts.
Well, John Randall didn't even think it was worth making a demonstration recording on. He thought it was so out of touch with modern-day country music, he said that song will never get recorded. And it took 5 years. That song sat on the shelf for 5 years before anybody had the nerve to record it. And then, of course, Brad Paisley had the genius to add Alison Krauss to his record, and that certainly helped to make it successful. John and I went in to write that morning that we wrote Whiskey Lullaby. And you kind of sit there when you go in with a co-writer and you kind of bat some ideas back and forth. Well, you know, you got anything you want to work on or whatever. And I had gone into the session with the idea of maybe writing a song called Midnight Cigarette. And if you remember, the first line of Whiskey Lullaby is, she put him out like the burning end of a midnight cigarette.
Yes.
And that was my idea to compare maybe a love affair that had faded like the midnight cigarette in an ashtray. But then when John came up with the line about he put the bottle to his head and pulled the trigger, I knew that's where we needed to go. So we put midnight cigarette into the first line and then probably forgot about it.
Beautiful song, and it just tells such a sad story about this couple. And the video took it to a whole other level. Did you enjoy seeing the video and how they put the images with the song?
Yeah, I watched some film, some of the video, but of course when you watch them film a movie or a video or something, you're only seeing part of it, and until you see it all put together, you really don't understand what it's going to be about. But the first time I saw the finished video, I knew that it was going to be what the song needed, because people were writing me and they were not understanding the song. They said, what do you mean he put the bottle to his head and pulled the trigger? Did he kill himself? Did he drink himself to death? What happened? There was a lot of confusion in the minds of a lot of fans. But once that video was out there and they saw it and it explained it, it was like, I get it. So the video in that case was so very, very helpful, and I'll always be grateful to Brad and all the people involved in doing that video.
Now, it goes to show the song what a good country song is, first of all, but that people have an appetite for it. If a great country song comes on the radio and comes along, you know, the fans out there will embrace it, even though, you know, a lot of times they might not say it's commercial.
Well, the problem is getting the song past the gatekeepers, who are the record people and the promotion people and everybody that are involved. Usually, if you can get a good song to the fans, you know, the fans will embrace it. But sometimes
right.
It's so hard to get it to the fans because you've got to go through all these other filtering processes along the way. And I was afraid that was going to happen with Whiskey Lullaby, but fortunately it didn't.
Now, another song just a couple years ago, another very traditional song and theme to it, but a funny song as well, George Strait and Give It Away, which I believe you wrote along with Jamie Johnson.
Jamie Johnson and Buddy Cameron and I wrote that song. And again, that was one of those days where we got together to write, and everybody says, okay, have you got an idea? And we kind of go around the room, and I didn't really have what I thought was a real fresh idea that day, although I carry a little notepad full of ideas with me all the time. And Buddy Cannon, he wasn't really excited about anything, and so we said, well, Jamie, you know, you got anything you want to write? And Jamie kind of looked up, and in the dry way that he talks sometimes, he said, well, I'm going through a divorce. I said, well, I've seen that movie and starred in it a couple of times, so maybe we could write about that. So he just starts out with the, you know, with the concept of the lady storming through the house and just taking everything and saying, just give it away, you know. And I guess when you hear the completed song, it, maybe it has a little bit of humor in it, but it's also got some sadness in it. I mean, nobody ever wants to see a relationship or a marriage break up.
Oh, for sure, yeah. The overall theme of it is sad. And at the very end, did that line come at the last minute, or was it part of the process when you got to about the heart and I can't even give it away? Wraps it up so nicely.
Yeah, well, I'll have to give Jamie the credit for that. That was his idea. Let me tell you what the biggest argument we had was in that song, and it was funny looking back on it now. You know, there's a line in there about she flung her diamond ring. And I said, Jamie, we can't say, I think Jamie came up with the line. I said, we can't say flung. She flung her diamond ring. And, well, that's what she did. She flung it. So we debated for a long time whether we could use the word flung or not. And then we decided, what the heck? You know, that's the word that fits.
Isn't that interesting? It kind of makes me think about words used in country songs and Randy Travis digging up bones, talking about exhuming things, and that's not a word you hear too often in country music, exhuming.
No, you don't. It's I don't think I've ever written that into a song.
Now, do you have your opinion on so many times lists will come out about the top country songs of all time, and of course we'll let you put yours aside for a moment because they're definitely up there, but do you have a song that you think is sort of the epitome of a country music song?
Well, I think the general consensus is that He Stopped Loving Her Today, which was written by Bobby Braddock, whom I was talking about a while ago. Bobby and Curly Putman wrote that, and of course it was the song of the year for 2 years in a row. You know, that's kind of the country song that kind of defines it all. I mean, it's heartfelt, it's sad, it's very emotional, it's very country. You know, there are songs for all occasions, but I think if you just wrap it up and say, you know, what's the best country song, the song that would define country music perhaps more than any other to me would be You Stop Loving Her Today.
That's awesome. And definitely, that's on the top of my list and so many other lists. It just, as you said, it says so much. Let's turn to your song that we talked about earlier, Bill, and I'll let you maybe just tell a bit more about the song, if you will, Papa's Sunday Boots. Again, a very moving song. Is there anything else you can share? And then we'll let our listeners have a listen to it. It's from your brand-new CD, Songwriter.
Yeah, I think maybe at this point it would be better to just let the people hear it and let the song speak for itself. And I hope the listeners, as they hear it, will follow the story and listen to the image and the things that this young boy was feeling in the story.
That sounds great. This is Bill Anderson and Papa's Sunday Boots here on In the Country.
That I saw them, he was wearing them to church. They weren't all scuffed and scratchy like the ones he wore to work. He was just a common man. He didn't even own a suit. But you could see the pride reflecting in the shine of Papa's Sunday boots. Every time he wore them, couldn't help but stare. I guess one day he noticed, 'cause he sat down in his chair. He slipped him off and said, "Son, why don't you try them on? They might not fit you now, but they'll be yours someday when I'm gone." Even after all this time, I still can't fill his shoes. But I wouldn't take $1 million for Papa's Sunday blues. Wasn't till our wedding day that I took them from the box. Still, they didn't fit me, so I wore 2 pairs of socks. I set them in the closet. I didn't wear them for a while, till I put them on the day that we brought home our first newborn child. And now I've made a list of special things that I want to do before I'm gone. I want to wear them out on that Opry stage and sing his favorite song. I want to walk our daughter down the aisle. And then my last request, make sure I'm wearing Papa's Sunday boots the day I'm laid to rest. Even after all this time, I still can't fill his shoes. But I wouldn't take $1 million for Papa's Sunday blues. And just think, the next time that I see him, I'll be wearing Papa's Sunday blues.
Papa's Sunday Boots, that is new music from Bill Anderson. It's from his recent CD, Songwriter, a very touching story song. And Bill, that is something that country music does so well. It just touches our hearts, and it reflects back our own lives.
Thank you. Well, you're right, it does, and that's part of what attracted me to country music when I was a young boy growing up, and it's part of what keeps me attracted to country music today. I can hardly perform that song when I get to the line there at the very end about "and just think the next time that I see him, I'll be wearing Papa's Sunday boots." That just really gets to me emotionally. And hopefully the people feel what we felt when we wrote and recorded it.
It's a very moving song, and I know so many people will embrace it and again, find their lives reflected in it. Another song of in recent years, Bill, that climbed the charts for Sugarland. Again, here you are working with all these new artists, and the song was Joey, which I was reading you described as the sort of like the teenage tragedy songs of the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, I remember songs from back in that era, like Teen Angel and various songs where Tell Laura I Love Her, songs where there's a death or a tragedy of some kind in a teenage situation. And that's kind of what we were trying to create when we wrote the song, Joey. I wrote it with Kristen Bush and Jennifer Nettles, who, of course, are Sugarland. And wasn't quite as big a hit as I had hoped. I think there were a couple of things that worked against it. Number one, it was released in the summertime, and I don't think you release a song like that when all the other songs on the radio are about getting barefoot and going down to the beach.
Right.
All of those fun things. And I also think that Joey needed what Whiskey Lullaby got. I think it needed a video to tell the story and explain it a little bit. I think maybe the way we wrote it, it was just a little bit too vague. And I think had the song been released in the winter and had we done the video, I think the song would have been a big hit. But, you know, it did all right, but it wasn't one of their biggest or best-known songs.
Yeah, it seems to be with songs, and you, of course, would know this, Bill, that as you pointed out, there's got to be several things in place, not just a great song and maybe not even a great artist, but the timing and other things that lead to a song going from doing well to doing terrific.
Well, I mean, there's evidence of that. The instances all over country music where maybe a song is recorded one time by somebody and it doesn't really do anything all that much, and then lo and behold, somebody else will come along a few years later and record the same song, and the timing is right or something's right. The stars are lined up in a way that they weren't lined up the first time, and the song succeeds where it didn't succeed the first time. So there's a lot more to all of this than we can even figure out. You know, we have all these charts and graphs and figures, and, you know, we think we're so smart, but, you know, the public decides what they like. We don't decide what the public likes. They decide, and that's the way it should be.
And that goes to show that there definitely is a craft of songwriting, but there really has to be the heart of songwriting, because that's really what gets to people, even though it has to be written a certain way. It's still got to touch people.
That's right.
Your song "Pole Folks," of course, a classic song, Bill, and I know, you know, people listen to it and think, "Wow, they were really poor," and that's how the characters are on the song. And there's a lot of humor. Can you give us a bit of a glimpse behind that song?
Well, I had that idea, or the first part of that idea, for a long time before I knew exactly what to do with it. I took the idea of the beginning part of the song. About there's a whole lot of people looking down their noses at me because I didn't come from a wealthy family and all that. I took that to Johnny Cash as far back as 1960, and he loved the idea. And he said, "I think we ought to call the song a One Mule Farmer." And I said, "I beg your pardon?" Johnny said, "Well, you know what a one mule farmer is. That's a farmer that, you know, plows his land and raises his crops and stuff, and he's only got one old mule." So we sat there at Johnny's house in California before he moved to Nashville, and we sat there for several hours on more than one occasion trying to write a song called One Mule Farmer, and it just never did work. And when I got back to Nashville, one day it just came out, you know, and we wasn't nothing but po' folks. And I said, "Whoa, that's where this song needs to go." So I kind of wrote it. Kind of wrote it tongue-in-cheek. I did not come from a wealthy family by any stretch of the imagination, but we were not as poor as the family depicted in the song. So it's, as Kris Kristofferson would say, partly truth and partly fiction.
And that's what some of the greatest songs are. And I also liked your version when you were on the show last time. It was around Christmas time, and you've got the Po' Folks Christmas version, which is a lot of fun.
Which I wrote in Canada, staring out of a motel window in Toronto one day many years ago. Yeah, sure did. I've written several of my songs in Canada. I wrote Bright Lights and Country Music there. I wrote the Po' Folks Christmas song and several others that people have probably never heard. I don't know. I think it's your cold winters up there. I think I just... I come up there and get warm in a motel room and get my guitar out and start writing.
Exactly. Much easier to write in the winter or rain, isn't it, than on a nice, hot, sunny day?
Yeah, because when it's beautiful, you want to go outside. You don't want to stay inside and write songs.
That's right. Now, you touched on a song a moment ago that I wanted to share, one of your classics, Bright Lights and Country Music, which takes us back to those great days of country music and the great sounds. Could you give us a bit of the scoop on this one, Bill, and then I'll share it with our listeners?
Well, the story is that I was performing at the Horseshoe Tavern in Toronto for a week, as we used to do back years ago, and... on Saturdays, when you played at the Horseshoe, you did a matinee show in the afternoon, and it was open to families. People could bring their children, and I don't know if maybe they didn't serve alcohol or something at the afternoon show. And then on the Saturday night, of course, you would do your regular nighttime show. And a fan of mine who lived in London, Ontario, sent me a letter to the Horseshoe, and I opened it when I got there, and she said, I will be at your show on Saturday. She said, but I will be at the night show rather than the matinee show. She said, because I like bright lights with my country music.
Oh.
And I said, okay. That sounds like a song idea to me. So Jimmy Gately, who was playing fiddle with me and fronting my band at the time, he and I actually went down in the dressing room downstairs at the old Horseshoe Tavern and wrote that song between shows.
Amazing story. Great to have a Canadian connection on it as well. Let's share that now. This is Bill Anderson, a great classic, Bright Lights and Country Music.
I love those bright lights and country music. I won't stay home and cry tonight like all the nights before. I've just learned that I don't really need you anymore. I found a little place downtown where guys like me can go, and they've got bright lights and country music. Bright lights and country music, a bottle and a glass. Soon I'll be forgetting that there ever was a past. And when everybody asks me what helped me forget so fast, I'll say bright lights and country music. A table by the bandstand, a bottle filled with wine, honky tonks were made for men with women on their minds. Nothing else can take away this loneliness of mine, quite like bright lights and country music. Bright lights and country music, a bottle and a glass. That there ever was a past. And when everybody asks me what helped me forget so fast, I'll say bright lights and country music. 'Cause I love those bright lights and country music.
And we all love those bright lights and country music, too. That is Bill Anderson here in the country. Bill, I wanted to ask you, of course, you're known as Whisperin' Bill, and we all know why, your voice and the delivery of your songs. But who came up with the nickname Whisperin' Bill for you?
A little guy named Don Bowman, who was a comedian on my television show back in the late 60s. I did a syndicated television show, and he did some comedic work, was a comedian on my show, and he kind of hung that on me, and Ralph Emery, the disc jockey who was on WSM back in those days, kind of picked it up and kind of spread it around, and pretty soon I was known as Whisperin' Bill, and I'm kind of glad because Bill Anderson is a very common name. There's probably at least one in every phone book in the world, and being Whisperin' Bill just kind of gave me a little bit of an unusual handle on a very common name.
And those reunion shows you do, the family reunion shows with all the country music performers, those are so much fun. I mean, we get to see these performers we love, hear the classic songs, and the banter is so much fun and so funny.
Well, if you think it's fun on your end, you should be in the studio with us. We just recorded some new shows last week, in fact, on Tuesday and Wednesday of last week, and that's just about as much fun as you can have, sit around with 30 or 40 of your friends and a great band and you know, studio full of guitars, and whenever you feel like just picking up and singing or doing something, you're free to do it. It's just absolutely wonderful. We had an incredible couple of days last week, and of course we hope to continue to do those shows for a long, long time.
And those will come available for us to buy, I guess, in stores and online?
I think these will be available. I think I heard somebody say in the fall of this year, and I also heard somebody say that in the fall of this year we're going to record a new family reunion gospel show, because so many of us started out singing gospel music, and so many of our fans enjoy hearing the old gospel songs. So I think we're going to do a family reunion gospel show. I think it's in October of this year.
That sounds great. I'll encourage our listeners, too, to head to your website, billanderson.com. And it's one of the great websites that I see. It's just so colorful, and there's so many different things on there, including blogs that you've written, messages to your fans, and updates. And it's a really well-designed site.
Thank you very much. And I appreciate you mentioning that. I would encourage the people to go there. People ask me all the time, well, I can't find your records in the stores. Where can I get them? We have all of my music available at billanderson.com. And, of course, information about the family reunion videos and how you can order those. And our tour schedule is on there so people can keep up with us and where we're performing and everything. So the Internet is a wonderful thing. I wonder sometimes how we all existed without it.
That's right. Hard to believe now with all the communication it gives us.
Well, it really does, and it just opens up pathways that we struggled to open for so many years. I mean, I remember back in the early days of my career in this business, you know, there was very little exposure for country music on television. You'd come into this business as a new artist, and it might take 5 or 6 years for people to find out what you look like. Sometimes it was better if they didn't find out what you look like. But now, you know, it's just a world of information out there, and people had access to it, and I think it's great.
That's terrific. Now, in our remaining moments here, Bill, I wanted to ask you about goals. Each year, do you set goals as far as with your music and things you want to achieve? Is there anything this year that you've got on your list that you're hoping to accomplish? Or do you just kind of wing it?
You know, I think, Dave, I think I kind of wing it more than anything. I've never been a goal-oriented person. I didn't start out to get into this business. It just kind of happened. And I find out the more that I just kind of relax and let things happen, the better off I am. And it's just so utterly amazing, some of the things that come my way. I mean, it's just... You sign on the Internet, or you answer a telephone call, and all of a sudden your whole life has changed, you know. And
yeah.
If you were so restricted by goals and you know, preconceived ideas about things, you might not be open to some of the changes. For example, I'll give you an example. Like last week, out of the clear blue sky, I get a telephone call from a television producer wanting to know if I wanted to be on a television special with Billy Ray Cyrus that they're getting ready to do. It's going to be shown all over the country, and it's in connection with Billy Ray's new album. I have a song that I wrote in his new album, and he wanted me to be on his TV show. I had no idea I was going to spend this coming Saturday taping a Billy Ray Cyrus television show, but I am.
Oh, that's amazing.
I got another email last week, believe it or not, from a theatrical producer wanting to know if I wanted to be in a stage play. It's not a Broadway show, not going to Broadway, but they're going to produce it here on a big stage in Nashville. He said, I think I've got the perfect part for you in this play. Well, unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to take the time to do it, but just these crazy things that come along. And so I find it's better to just let things happen rather than to set certain goals, and then you're disappointed when things don't happen.
That's a great philosophy, and amazing how many opportunities are still coming your way, and all the great songs you've written and I know are still ahead. Bill, it's been a pleasure once again spending this time with you. I know our listeners will agree with me on that, and sharing the music. And Papa's Sunday Boots is a beautiful song, which I'm sure our listeners will want to purchase. Thanks so much for spending the time, Bill.
Well, Dave, it's always great to talk to you. I appreciate you giving me this time to talk to your listeners, and hopefully we'll be back up that way again sometime before too long.
Sounds great to me. My guest today has been country legend Bill Anderson, and be sure to head to billanderson.com. You can also purchase from there the brand new CD called Songwriter, and also past CDs of Bill's. I'm Dave Woods, and that'll wrap up this edition of In the Country.